Blog Talk Radio. Today is Tuesday, October 17th, 2017, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. I hope it has been a great day for you. It's winding down, I know, or up, maybe depending on what you do. But whether it's winding up or down, I hope that it's winding up well or winding down wonderfully, whichever way it may be going. I know if you're like many of us, the days just seem to run one right into the other so quickly. But that's what happens to those who are in it to win it. It just feels like that when you're trying to make stuff happen. And you know what? My guest today knows that all too well. Mr. Corey Pegues is the author of Once a Cop, The Streets, The Law, Two Worlds, One Man. And he's a former NYPD law enforcement executive. And, you know, his book tells a pretty amazing story of how he went from the streets to the executive ranks within the New York Police Department. He is a busy, busy man, I tell you. He's also a motivational speaker, community leader, expert witness on police-related matters. And it's not surprising because, I'm telling you, he has one comprehensive and outstanding career background. And I just have to read it all to you because it is really, truly something. Corey Pegues, a Queens, New York native, is a retired New York Police Department executive, as well as author, motivational speaker, as I said, community leader, and expert witness on police-related topics. His career spans over two decades, and it speaks for itself. It does. That's why I had to read it to you. Immediately after graduating high school in Queens, New York, he enlisted in the United States Army, where he served almost 4 years as a medical specialist until the end of his enlistment in March 2001. After his honorable discharge from the Army, he enlisted in the New York State National Guard, where he spent the next 14 years of his military career. Subsequent to his discharge from the Army, Corey entered the NYC Police Academy in 1992. Upon graduation from the academy, he was assigned to the 114th Precinct located in Astoria, Queens. After more than 5 years as a police officer, he was promoted to the rank of sergeant and assigned to the 81st Precinct in Brooklyn. For the next couple of years, Corey was promoted to the rank of lieutenant and transferred to the Transit District Number 30. While there, he was assigned as a day tour platoon commander. After 6 months, Corey was transferred to the 28th Precinct in Harlem. He held several lieutenant positions while assigned to that command for 3 years. In December 2006, he was promoted to the rank of captain and assigned as the executive officer in the 75th Precinct in Brooklyn. After only 11 months, his strong work ethic, knowledge of police work, and leadership was recognized, and he was transferred to Police Service Area 2, where he was assigned as the commanding officer. In May 2008, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly promoted Corey to the rank of Deputy Inspector. June of that year, he was assigned as the commanding officer of the 67th Precinct, which is one of the most violent precincts in the city of New York. After nearly 4 years of successful crime reductions and excellent community police relationship building, in January 2012, Corey was assigned to patrol Borough Brooklyn North. After a little more than 21 years of exemplary service to the citizens of New York City, Corey retired in April 2013. Well, I'm not done. As a result of his professionalism and gravitas in the field, Corey rolls quickly through the ranks of NYPD. He is a celebrated commander and public servant who has been at the forefront of bridging the gap between community and police. Over the course of his career, he has received numerous rewards and specialized training on a myriad of topics, aiding in his impeccable record on the police force. He was also an adjunct professor in criminal justice department at Monroe College for 5 years. He recently penned his new Time award-winning memoir, Once a Cop, which was released in 2016 by Simon & Schuster, Altria Books. He's made guest appearances on several TV and syndicated radio talk shows, including but not limited to CNN, Al Jazeera America, Arise America, RT Today, The Michael Bazin Show, WPIX, Channel 11, New York One, News 12, Long Island, NPR, The Combat Jack Show, 1010 Wins, Hot 97, Street Soldiers, and BET.com to give his expert analysis opinion in the field of law enforcement. He's also been featured as a guest on several high-profile cases that have transpired around the nation. As a former president and founder of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, Long Island Chapter, and advisor to other professional affiliates, Corey has organized various community events such as Christmas toy drives, back-to-school giveaways, and Thanksgiving food drives, to name a few. In addition, he's held a leading role in organizing events to raise money to support local schools. Corey has also fought for the rights of others in making sure their civil liberties were being protected. He's a graduate of St. Joseph's College with a BS in Organizational Management, an MPS in Criminal Justice Leadership from St. John's University, and a postgraduate certificate from the Police Management Institute at Columbia University School of Business. And if you think I said a mouthful, I sure did. And I needed everybody to know what your background is, because it truly is awesome when you understand that you started out kind of a little rough, but I tell you, you put the polish on that thing, and it's truly amazing. I'm excited to have you back. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Well, you, with all of that being said and read, you know, I talked to you before. I watched your interviews. I've seen some things you've done. You are an amazingly humble guy with all of this incredible work that you've done and that you do. I'm kind of curious to start our conversation off on your upbringing. Tell the audience, we only have about a good 20 minutes that we can talk, but tell the audience about some of the upbringing and the kind of character that you have now. Were certain values instilled in you as a young person? I know you kind of, as I said, you got off track a little bit, but what kind of values were instilled in you as a young man?
Well, as a young man, I grew up in church. you know, my mother took me to church every Sunday as they read in a book. I went to church, did all three services, 7, 11, you know, 8. I did Bible
all
school.
Of them, huh?
So, you know, it was a black family. So, you know, generation before mine was heavily into church. So we went to church every Sunday. So I knew right from wrong. I had morals and values instilled in me, even though my mother didn't have her own high school education or my father, but they did teach me love and how to respect people. But as I got a little older, I gravitated towards the streets with no help from them, and I started selling drugs at the early age of 13 years old. I started selling marijuana, and then eventually started selling harder drugs like mescaline tabs and loose cocaine, and then this wonder drug, crack cocaine, came about doing that. Eventually started working for one of the most violent drug conglomerates in America, definitely the East Coast, but maybe even in America, called the Supreme Team. And so I made some serious mistakes. Also at the age of 17 in high school, in the 12th grade, I had two kids by two different women in the 12th grade. I was just like 17 years old, still in high school, didn't graduate yet. As a matter of fact, my son was born in the 11th grade, and my daughter was born while I was in the 12th grade. I ended up graduating from high school 2 weeks after she was born.
Well, you had a whole lot happen in a very short period of time.
Yeah. All the while I was in the streets doing all the crazy stuff, carrying guns, shooting at people, getting shot at, and selling drugs and doing all this crazy stuff. I knew everything I was doing was wrong, and I knew that I had some guardian angel must have been on my trouble, arming on my shoulder, looking out for me. And, 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, my mother died. So now here I am, 17, 18 years old, two kids, high school diploma, nowhere to go. So I decided at that moment, actually I decided December 12th, 1986, when my son was born, 6 months prior to me graduating from high school, that I wanted to get out of the street because I wanted to be a positive role model for him. It took me a little while. I didn't leave until the following October. But he actually really was the turning point that made say, now I have to get out of here.
You know, what you just told us, you covered quite a bit of time. And I just want to reflect on your mom. She must have done a very good job of instilling some things into you. She definitely was your guardian angel. You got a praying mama. You know, something's going to get you straightened out. So I'm not surprised that your life turned out as well as it has. I think it's interesting, and you touched on it, but I know it goes way deeper than what you've just said. Your description on your book on Amazon, the first line says, your book is titled is Once a Cop, but being once a criminal, when we try to even think about wrapping our minds around that, and I'm sure you're not the only person with that type of story, but when we think about that, and you were all the way in, how did you go from being a church boy to being influenced enough by whomever it was, who I'd like for you to share, to go into the streets? What made that so appealing to you? And I know your mom and dad must have been having fits.
Yeah, well, let me just double back to you, Sam. There's many more cops that have my story. There probably are a lot of cops that have the same story as me, but you'd be hard-pressed to find executives that live the life that I live. I know a whole bunch of cops that sold drugs and sergeants, maybe lieutenants, but I don't know too many executives. And in the NYPD, which is the biggest police department in the country, I am the only one that ever went through that had the life that I live. That around the country, not bragging about it, but not. I know a lot of police executives around the country. Most police are groomed to be police. No drug dealer is groomed to be an executive. But mom had a tremendous amount of influence. My early formative years is what grounded me. So you have to realize, I say read the book in the third grade. My father left. We lost our house. We had a lot of roaches, mice running around. Sometimes we didn't have no lights, no water, no gas. So things was getting really bad for us. We had to move above a gambling spot. We moved in an apartment above a gambling spot. And so I was spending more and more time out in the streets. I was very good playing basketball. So I went to the local park. I met a friend in the book. His name is Smooth, who's still like my very best friend in the world to this day. And he pretty much introduced me to the game. The ironic thing about him is he came from a two-family home, mother, father, sister, brother, two cars, white picket fence. And he didn't need to be in streets, but he hang out with gangsters, drug dealers, and pimps. He's probably not going to be a stockbroker. And so that's what it was in the 80s. Drugs was rampant. Crack cocaine had infiltrated the ghettos all around America. And it was a tremendous amount of money being exchanged hand over fist. You're talking about dilapidated houses, some lower income, middle class neighborhoods, but, drug dealers riding around in Mercedes Benz, Rolls Royce, BMWs, Audis, you name it. They had it. And those were the heroes those were the heroes to the young kids like me in the street. And, you know, I always tell people, and I didn't write this in the book, but since the age of 13, I've been taking care of myself. You know, I have a 10-year-old son. I can't imagine him in 3 years taking care of himself. I mean, when I say taking care of myself, I have not asked anyone to pay my rent, to buy me cars, or do anything. I might borrow $5 from somebody, but from the age of 13, I literally have been taking care of myself financially.
Wow. What was it about your story that compelled you to put it into a book? What was that conversation with yourself about? Because it's a big undertaking, and it is quite a story.
Yeah, for me, I mean, once I went into the New York City Police Academy, I knew that I was living a life that few people have lived. And I started journaling. I started journaling a lot of people. I didn't write that in a book neither. It's one of the main reasons I got my book deal. Journaling, everything. I knew growing up the way I grew up. I mean, you know, I was given lessons on drug dealers that I worked with when I was a training sergeant. I write about that in the book. I was a training sergeant, and I had to do training on the Supreme Team. I was 5 years removed from selling drugs with the Supreme Team, and here I'm now talking about these guys getting ready to get out of jail, and these were friends of mine. You know, the hair would stick up on the back of my neck while I'm doing this training, hoping and praying that nobody has a mugshot of me somewhere, because, you know, I was arrested before and never convicted, so if there was a mugshot of me, some cop had to take it or see it, you know, so I knew this life that I was living was different. And the main reason I wanted to write my book and put it, that it was two main reasons. One was for generations of piggies coming after me, my sons, my grandsons, my, you know, great-grandsons coming after me. I want them to read my story from, you know, from bad to good. You know, I wanted to put that on paper, but more importantly, there was a lot of kids out here in the streets, even today, they're selling drugs, they're in gangs, they think that's the lifestyle that they, you know, they can make it, and I'm here to let them know that they could too change their lives. And if I could change one kid's life, then the book was very successful.
Absolutely. Did I know that I saw recently your story's been picked up for a documentary.
Yes, we've been just assigned to deal with Vernon Films based out of LA and London, and we've been shooting a feature documentary. So we're shooting a feature documentary, looking to put it in the movies, and I'm getting a lot of Hollywood interest right now for my story to be turned into, like, you know, The Wire or Empire or something like that, a TV series or a major motion picture. But we're focusing right now on the documentary because we already started shooting. So, you know, I hope that people look at it. The name of the documentary is A Cops and Robbers Story. They can follow us on Instagram or follow on Facebook and see behind-the-scenes footage of the documentary.
Well, that's got to be exciting for you. I'm sure you didn't start out thinking that it would blossom into all of this. And how is it that what was it that gained the most momentum, the most attention for you with the book?
Well, it's just the story in general, how I misguided a young kid from the streets that did all of these mischievous things and criminal things, changed his life to become an executive in one of the biggest police departments in the country. As a matter of fact, the front picture of the book is a picture of me when I got promoted to captain. I was one of 13 black executives in the 40,000-man police department. I was able to tell 37,987 people what to do. That was a phenomenal feat, from going to the street shooting at people, carrying guns, robbing people, to be an executive in one of the biggest police department in the country, the sixth biggest army in the world in terms of number. It was a phenomenal feat. So, again, I knew that I had to put this on paper. I had to put pen to paper. And I wrote my own book. I just, you know, sat down. I got injured before I retired. I knew I couldn't be a cop. I told my wife to bring my laptop to the hospital. And I started writing my story from the day I was born yesterday. I was in the hospital.
I'm interested in knowing what happened with, and I guess for lack of a better word, some of your coworkers on the street. When you made this life change and you didn't look back, I mean, you obviously were truly a man on a mission because you have, you know, you went up to the ranks to executive. You know, you left a lot of people behind. How did they react to this?
Well, the ironic thing, and, you know, I get asked this question all the time, all of my friends, they were very happy for me. They was very proud of me. I was one that made it. And, you know, they was living vicariously through me. They was happy and saying, hey, Life, you know, my street name was Life or Boo. It was like, listen, man, you made it. Keep going. Don't look back. There's nothing out here in these streets. You're gone. I left October 18th, 1987. And next week, on a couple of days, it'll be 30 years. The 18th of October will be 30 years since I sold a drug or committed a crime. It's just been a phenomenal run. And the good thing about my documentary is if you read the book, you're going to see all the people that I grew up with, all of my drug dealer friends, my criminal friends are all being interviewed for the documentary. Ones that's been in jail, ones been shot and everything, we're all, because I didn't make it here by myself. There was a lot of people that helped me get here. And those friends that I grew up with was very important in my life. Even though we did some crazy stuff, we're 50 years old now. So we look back and laugh at all the things, but I needed them to be included in this story. And so I'm very excited about people getting to know who Smooth is, who Dre is, who Malik. I mean, Malik is the drug dealer that I used to work with, the Supreme Team. You know, actually, I just got off the phone with him about 15 minutes ago. He's going to be interviewed for the documentary. So this is going to be a very, very good documentary. And people are excited about it. I can't name major Hollywood companies, but we're getting a lot of interest in the story right now.
Well, I have no doubt that it's going to be a major success. You know, I want to know, as you know, as this whole thing evolves, what you mentioned that, you know, you really want to make an impact and let people know that they can change their lives. And whenever I do a show, I like to have a very important takeaway. When people listen, you know, that are dads, moms, or maybe people who feel like they've gotten off on the wrong track in life and are hoping and praying and, you know, wishing that they had another chance or an opportunity. I think your story definitely tells us that there is always a chance that you can turn things around. I guess what I would want you to share in the last few minutes that we have, because a lot of people don't know how to flip the script. They don't know, you know, this whole thing sounds like it was a smooth transition, but I know there had to be, you talked about how, you know, I know that it couldn't be. You talked about the, you know, the kind of epiphany you had after you had your children. Let people know what that struggle was, but you ultimately made the right decision. And when you did, you truly did turn things around. And again, you just never looked back. So speak to that in the last couple minutes that we have. What would you tell people, you know, because you do understand that mental, emotional struggle.
Right. Well, what I like to tell people, you got to pick something that motivates you. So my motivating factor growing up in the streets, it was about getting money. Like, it was just about getting money. And then once my child was born, my motivation was wanting to be a good father, a good dad, because my father left in the third grade. So I was so hell-bent on wanting to see my kids grow and be a positive influence on their lives. The money didn't matter. I went from making a couple of thousand dollars a day to enlisting in the military and making $600 a month. So money wasn't a motivating factor for me anymore, because what came with that $3,000 or $2,000 a day, what came with that was the police after me. My girlfriend maybe set me up. One of my boys on the block getting ready set me up. So I had left all of that alone, and I was motivated by trying to be a good father. And that's what I tell people, you know, like I would never tell a drug dealer or a gangster to get out of a gang if I don't have an opportunity for them, because I was once there, and I was a wolf. So when a wolf is hungry, they got to eat. So my food for me was going to the military, so I wasn't able to eat. I wasn't going to be eating lobster tails like I was back then, but as long as I could eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to just coat my stomach, it was all right for me. And so when people are down and out, they have to have some type of motivating factor, and they got to stick with it. I stuck with that $600 a month, which they are, whatever that is, whatever the math is on that. I wasn't motivated by that no more. I wasn't motivated about carrying guns or wearing jewelry or the nice sneakers. Jordans was just coming out, you know, when I was in the streets. I wasn't motivated by any of that stuff anymore. I just wanted to get out of the streets and live positive. That's why October 9th, I was married, you know, right out of high school. I had my child and was like, okay, now I'm going to go on and live my life.
Well, you have lived an extraordinary life to still be a young man and retired at that. And I want to thank you so much for carving out some time to speak to me today and let people know what you're doing. And definitely I will run the radio show through the week so people can get an inside look, hear your voice about what you have been through and what you've done. It's truly a compelling story. It truly is. So I wish you just so much success. And don't forget to, you know, invite me to that movie gala.
Quite sure. You definitely on the guest list. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you interviewing me and getting my story out to the masses. Again, I mean, I didn't do it to become a millionaire, obviously. You know, we make money off it, that's fine. But it's more about getting a message out there to people that's feeling like they're hopeless and there's nowhere else to turn. You can do it. Something that motivates you, something positive, and you stick with it, you can do it no matter how many times you fall down. My motto was always, you know, through the police department, I was always like the only black guy. So I didn't only have to kick the door down, I had to knock it off the hinges, you know, because they didn't want me to be there. They didn't want me to be there.
Well,
and I knew that education would kill everybody.
Yeah. Well, you did it. And I just, again, thank you. It's been a privilege to talk to you. And you keep shining that great big old light, because you sure are going to lead a lot of people in the right direction. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Okay. Thank you again for having me. I appreciate it.
All righty. You take care. Talk to you again.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now. I want to thank all of you as well for hanging out with me. I've been talking with Mr. Corey Pegues, former NYPD law enforcement executive. We've been talking about his incredible book, Once a Cop, The Street, The Law, Two Worlds, One Man. And his story truly is compelling. He went from once a criminal to a cop and a very outstanding executive level police officer. Get the book. It's on Amazon. Once a Cop, again, The Street, The Law, Two Worlds, One Man. I'm going to look forward to talking with you guys later this week. I have another Saturday show planned for you. We'll be talking about some politics. That ought to be interesting, huh? I can't say that I've ever done that, so that's going to be new for all of us. But I'm going to look forward to talking to you then. Tell your friends on social media about Foxology, okay? All right. So take care. In the meantime, until the next time, be good, be blessed, be awesome.